There was a time years ago when people would hear stories of alien abductions and kind of shake their head, shy away, giggle. Not anymore. You know, even since the Betty and Barney Hill case, alien abductions have been taken very seriously by a lot of people, including some very high-powered investigators. Matter of fact, one who was so dear to all of us, Dr. John Mack from Harvard University, he died. Was hit by a car in London, but it was becoming his career, his entire effort, his life to get to the bottom of this. This program tonight will be dedicated to him. In a moment, our special guest, Jeremy Vaney on Coast to Coast AM. I'll tell you about Jerry Vaney. He's going to stay with us for the entire program, but we're going to have several other guests come in and out throughout the night. Jerry Vaney is an inside columnist for the very fine UFO magazine and coordinator of the first annual Culture of Contact UFO Film and Arts Festival in the Big Apple, New York City, taking place next weekend. Those of you who want to go out there, June 22, 24, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. He is an alien abductee who claims that in early 2001, an energy that looks and acts like a possessive force entered his body, thrusting him into an enlightenment process. Though not caused by abductions, Vaney says the two are related. In 2003, he released an autobiography chronicling his life as an abductee entitled I Know Why the Aliens Don't Land. And just last month released a DVD documentary about his life that shows his energy in action. The movie is called No One's Watching, an Alien Abductee Story. Tonight on Coast to Coast, first-time guest Jerry Vaney. Hey, Jerry, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good, good. So before this happened to you, now you be honest with me, when you would hear stories of alien abductions, what did you think?
Before this happened to me, well, this has been a lifelong thing with me, so it's always been there, you know.
So you've always felt there was something other than the norm happening?
No, I didn't always feel that. It sort of dawned on me, you know, well, dawned on me. It sort of shocked me in eighth grade when I was on the way to Vermont. I'm from Massachusetts originally, and I was with my mother and sister, and we were somewhere along the New Hampshire-Vermont border, and I was sitting in the back seat on the driver's side, my sister in the front seat, my mother driving, and, you know, it was a stereotypical late at night, you know, desolate road, and there was a field and there were a couple of mountains, and between the two mountains was this, you know, we came around the bend and there it was this just absolutely fake-looking UFO. It was sort of fluorescent or self-luminescent green, round or oval-shaped, tilted on its axis, and presumably the bottom of the craft was sort of facing us, had a flat bottom, red and blue blinking lights, had porthole windows running down the center of it. The top half was spinning one way, the bottom half was spinning counter to it, and it was just sort of hovering in the air silently doing that, or, you know, we were a distance away, but I rolled down my window and couldn't hear anything. You know, I don't know if it was legitimately silent or if we were just too far away. But in any event, I mean, you know, it was what it was. And we saw this thing, and actually my sister didn't. My sister was too busy reading her book to even look up. But my mother and I saw this thing, and we're just like, wow, you know, trying to get my sister to look, you know, Cara, look at this. And she just wouldn't do it. Very strange. But in any event, we got to our grandparents' house and told them about it and thought they'd laugh us out of the place, but they actually, it was the reverse. It was, no, actually your uncle, you know, saw a UFO and, you know, now he's reading up on it. And they just happened to have Time Life Mysteries of the Unexplained sitting on the coffee table. So it was this weird, not just UFO event, but UFO event plus this synchronous other, you know, felt like it was pre-planned event. And that woke me up.
Yeah, fascinating, too, because the Barney and Betty Hill case happened in New Hampshire as well.
A lot of things going on. It was right around the same place, yeah.
Ah, well, that is. Okay, we're going to have a couple other guests joining you a little bit later on tonight. But in this particular case, when you had this feeling, and you talk now about how this could be related to an alien abduction, though originally it was not, what do you mean by that?
I mean, it started in, I don't know, late 2000, early 2001. I was reading these books by Jiddu Krishnamurti, and if anyone's not familiar with him, he's basically He was the, you know, the sort of savior of this sect of the Theosophical Society. You know, they built this guy up. They told him he's going to be the second coming of Christ, basically. And, you know, he was raised to believe this about himself. And the very first sermon he gave was, "Don't believe it. I'm not the second coming. There's no such thing. Religion is a load. Let's tear this whole thing down." And then went on to sort of talk, and those talks became these books. And the basic message is, you know, truth is a pathless land, and basically you can't confront the unknown with the known. And so if there is something that's unknown, if there is such a thing as truth, then you can't touch it with the known. So you pretty much have to stop thought. You have to clear your mind and actually let go of the ego. For the sake of doing it, with no motivation in mind, or else that motivation becomes the illusion, and see what's there. And he never says what's there. He just says, do it and find out. So I really got what he was saying, you know, and the second that I really got what he was saying, this thing welled up in me, you know, my head, not like in The Exorcist, but more like an exercise, my head right. started to spin around, and it wasn't me doing it, and actually... I slipped a disc in my back, and I didn't realize this until quite a while later, but, you know, I felt it pop out. I didn't know what it was, but turns out I slipped a disc in my back, you know, all at the same time. It was really strange. And then it just sort of kept growing. Whatever this thing was just, you know, sort of kept blooming in other ways, you know, psychic abilities and things that I have no belief in, you know, like I'm a total hypocrite when it comes to this stuff. If this wasn't happening to me, I would be making fun of it. So, you know, really I have nothing to fall back on here except that it's happening. And eventually that slipped disc, because I just didn't pay attention to it and just let it get horribly bad,
yeah.
got yeah. really bad and became sciatica. And I ended up in the hospital on morphine for a few days.
Oh my gosh.
Until I could, you know, and then as soon as they found out I didn't have insurance, you know, they were like, well, as soon as you get
take him out, yeah, kick him out.
Why don't you crawl on out of here?
Yeah, put him to the curb.
Yeah, because originally they had said, you need surgery, definitely. And then they, you know, I didn't have insurance, so they were like, well, you don't need surgery. Just leave. Yeah. So I just left. And this energy basically rehabilitated me enough to where I could then get to rehab, you know, get to rehabilitation. And the energy, so I just had all this time to, like, lie around and let this thing take over and do what it was going to do. And it just kept evolving, for lack of a better word, you know, it kept flowering.
So it kept tuning you up. You kept getting more intuitive, more psychic, well, more everything.
No, not just that. It literally moves my body around. It makes me do. I mean, I'm a fat white guy from Massachusetts. I have no idea about any of this, you know, and it's like, it's making my body do exercises that look like yoga, or look like things I've seen, you know, involving meditation or Tai Chi, you know, some sort of martial art, some sort of ritualistic stuff. And that's, you know, sort of how my back got better. And originally I thought, okay, here's what happens. You shut off thought and your body has its own language that it wants to speak. So it just flowers naturally, you know, and some ancient genius did this way back when, and jotted down the results and said, look, here's a method. It's called, you know, it's called Tai Chi. It's called whatever, you know.
At what point did you tell yourself, I'm not alone here. This is happening to millions of people around this planet.
Is it happening to millions of people? I don't know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because I haven't heard of this. I haven't seen it, you know.
It is. Well, you know, when you put together your thoughts, you have asked a question that so many of us always ask, and that is, okay, if they're out there, why don't they land? And you wrote, I know why the aliens don't land. So tell us, why in the heck don't they land?
Well, I think it's because they see from the point of view of oneness, and we see from the point of view of separation. And so to land and talk to us would be to engage our illusion, you know? And so they literally couldn't do it. It would be like, you know, basically, in order to engage us as we are, we would have to sort of drag them down to our level, and that's not going to be fruitful.
Why don't they drag us up to their level?
Well, I think they're trying. I think they're sort of midwiving us into that, but I don't, you know, I think I'm stealing from Whitley Strieber by saying that, but I think he's dead on, you know. I think they're trying, but they have to poke and prod us in abstract ways. They can't literally... Like, you know, I just literally told you that if you clear your mind and shut off thought for the sake of doing so, this will happen. but that's not going to wake you up. You know what I mean? Like, the telling you it doesn't work. So they have to do other, you know, they have to use other ways. And the reason that they would even bother in the first place is because once you see from the point of view of oneness, it's one waking oneself up. And that's what they're doing. And I think once we join that, then we'll, you know, probably go do that to other planets.
You are convinced that whatever they may be, they are physical entities throughout this universe? Or do you think it's dimensional, as so many other people think?
Yeah, no, I suspect little one, little two. I mean, it's definitely dimensional from my experiences, but I feel like it doesn't really matter. Like, you know, if we figure out dimension hopping or planet hopping, pretty much everywhere is going to be our playground, you know?
So you may go from a dimension to a physical planet and back and forth.
Right.
Well, this abduction experience, if that is indeed what happened to you, I mean, what are the recollections of it beyond what you've already said? I mean, did you see physical beings? Did they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, this energy thing isn't the abduction stuff. The abduction stuff, well, after that UFO sighting in eighth grade, for the next few years, I had these sort of first-person flashback bits of, you know, memory that, you know, they were, maybe they were dreams, who knows, but they certainly were the first time I ever remembered dreaming in first person, and they were just snippets of things like being taken from my house by some unseen force, you know, and remembering reading in one of Whitley Strieber's books about him grabbing his cat, you know, into an abduction scenario so that he would know that it was real. Well, in the same way, I tried to grab a picture off the wall from behind the TV, but I just couldn't get it.
As you're being whooshed away, huh?
Yeah, and, it, you know, all of this it is in the context of a flashback, you know, and another one was being, you know, driving with my mother, and this giant triangle craft, you know, is overhead, and I'm fishing through the glove compartment trying to find something to draw it so that I'll remember it, and it sucks up the entire car, and as we get into what would be the bottom of the craft, suddenly these sort of blue lights on the thing start going in sequence, and, you know, I'm just scared out of my mind, and, you know, things like that. And then eventually, at the age of 15, something actually walked into my bedroom. I mean, really did walk into my bedroom. And it was the middle of the night, and I heard my door open because it makes this sort of, you know, this thump sound. And I heard that, and I sat upright a little bit on my elbows, and, you know, some sort of shadowy being, couldn't make out the detail, walked in, and I sat upright. I, like, bolted up, and I was like, you know, I said, "Ma, what are you doing here? Go back to bed," because she was the only person in the house, and immediately thought, "This isn't your mother. You know what this is." And this whoever this person was babbling at me, and I could see its head bobbing, and it had in its left hand some sort of, you know, sharp, pointy thing, which I thought...
Still shadowy looking?
Yeah.
At that point?
I mean, I never
okay.
made out detail of this thing. And I just sort of, like, I really, you know, fight or flight instinct kicked in, and I flew. I threw covers over my head and just, you know, shivered, you know, and that's all I remember of that. I don't know what else happened there. Cut to a couple of weeks later, and my sister is home from college Christmas vacation, and the same sort of thing, that I hear my bedroom door open, and so now I'm awake, and this time I look at the clock. I didn't look at it the first time, and it's 4:37 in the morning, and so I hear this thing, and I roll over. I don't want to deal with this, you know? So I roll over, and I'm scared out of my mind. I don't even know why. I don't see anything walk in. I don't hear anything. But I'm thinking, they're here for your sister. For some reason, this is going through my mind. They're here for your sister. And that's not enough for me to get up and check it out. So I make a little joke to myself. I'm like, well, you got to pee anyway, so you might as well just get up. So I try to get up, and literally, and not paralysis, it's more... I'm moving my body one way, and my body is moving the opposite. Like, all the muscles in my body are gluing themselves as I'm moving. And this happens, and I'm like, okay, well, if I'm going to tell the kids at school this tomorrow, you know, I better make sure it's not my sheets holding me back.
Well, and assuming you were going to come back tomorrow, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's not even, you know, all I can do at that point is sort of make little jokes in my head. I'm not even thinking rationally at that point. So I try it again. I try to move, and, you know, can't do it. Just can't do it. Scared out of my mind. And again, you know, I don't know much more of what happens other than that, you know.
Do you recall being in a craft?
Not at that point, no. No. In fact, I don't even, here's what's interesting to me. You know, skeptics make the argument that, you know, this is all, you know, media images. You see these beings and then you hallucinate them or whatever during sleep paralysis, except that I never saw them. I didn't see them, you know, up close and personal, or have a memory, I should say, of seeing them until 99 and then again in 2001. And then, you know, when they were right by my bedside and I did see them, you know, and I do have a memory of that encounter.
So this has been ongoing, but in the beginning you really didn't have recollection of what was going on, because I was going to say maybe you were just dreaming. You're now convinced these weren't dreams. These were really happening to you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you struggle with that all your life. I you know, and I went to a hypnotherapist at one point in college because it was just eating me up. I don't know why, but it was eating me up inside.
What did he say to you?
Well, actually she put me under hypnosis, and I felt like she was kind of new agey and had a will to believe. So I felt like, I don't know. I felt like what I told her, was not real. I felt like I was trying to say things that she would want to hear, or something like that. I mean, I felt that at the time as I was saying them, right? But I only felt like I was under hypnosis for a few minutes. But I was actually out for a couple of hours. And when I got up, she offered me free therapy. But, you know, I didn't take it because I felt like she had the will to believe. And, you know, I remembered what I had said and it wasn't real to me.
Did she know what you were coming there for in the first place?
Yes. But here's the important point. It wasn't until many years later, like my first radio interview for my book, like in 2003, where the guy said, so what did you say under hypnosis? And I said, you know, I don't remember. And he said, well, you didn't bother to ask? And I said, no. It never even dawned on me what it was that I would have said under hypnosis where she would have offered me free therapy. And the only way I can think that this makes sense is that she put me under deeper than I remember, because I was under for hours, not minutes, like I felt. And I said something so horrible that she told me not to remember it, you know. She gave me a suggestion not to remember, not to ask.
That's did she ever tape it and play it back for you?
No. And I've lost touch with her. I mean, I have her name, but her
number. So you don't know what happened?
No, I have no idea. Very strange.
So why'd you even bring it up then?
Right now?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm bringing it up because I was under hypnosis for hours, you know.
I thought you were drawing me to a huge conclusion here of some abduction case.
No, I'm drawing you to that. I probably said something amazing that I have no memory of and no access to. So yeah, anticlimactic. Sorry.
Tell me about your work with UFO Magazine, Jeremy. What do you do there?
I'm an insight columnist there, which basically means I get to sort of write whatever I want. And I originally, you know, I sent them my book to review, and they said, well, you know, we haven't read your book, but we looked at your website. We really like it. You're a good writer. Why don't you come write for us? So,
well, Bill Burns is a good man, a dear friend of mine, co-writer with me, as a matter of fact. And
yeah.
As you know, the publisher of UFO Magazine. I mean, have you become a believer in UFOs, or are you a skeptic?
Like I said, I'm a hypocrite. I mean, I'm skeptical of other people, but I know what I saw, you know? I mean, there's no denying a fluorescent green, you know, unless you have an explanation for that of what that could possibly be. I mean, it was what it was.
But still, you still never know what it was, do you?
Well, that's the unidentified part, but I know what it wasn't. I know that it wasn't an airplane. I know it wasn't a helicopter. I know it wasn't a blimp, you know?
How do you know it wasn't angelic?
Angelic. I don't know. I guess I just don't. I don't have a belief in that. I don't know. What would it be, angelic?
Well, maybe they were visitors.
Technology?
Maybe they were visitors from that other plane, not to abduct you, but maybe to enlighten you, to teach you.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, this word abduction, I think, is kind of harsh. You know, I don't really mean it like it's, you know, this evil, awful thing happening. No, I think ultimately, it is that. It is an enlightenment process, whatever these beings are.
Well, stay with us, Jeremy, in a moment. None other than Bud Hopkins, one of the great alien abductee investigators, our guest on Coast to Coast AM. Well, a person I admire tremendously, Bud Hopkins, he joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. Bud Hopkins, world-renowned UFO abduction researcher, having investigated more than 700 cases, now heading the Intruders Foundation, a not-for-profit scientific research and support organization. Bud has pioneered, continues now to lead the investigation into the most controversial aspect of this UFO phenomenon, the systematic abduction of human beings by UFO occupants. His website, intrudersfoundation.org. You will find linked at Coast to Coast AM. It is my pleasure to bring in Bud Hopkins. Bud, welcome back. How are you?
Well, fine. I'm very glad to be back with you, George.
Yeah, it's been a while, my friend. Lots going on. September 28th, 2004, you were with me, and almost, you know, as we get closer to September, it's been 3 years then. Have things changed, Bud, in your field?
Well, I think they have. I mean, first of all, the work that I've been doing, and Dave Jacobs and others, looking into cases of so-called hybrid beings, transgenic beings, who seem to be able to live and operate in the world on a daily basis, there's been more evidence accumulating that that is in fact going on, that this is sort of the a transitional point in something. We're not sure exactly what this is going to lead to, but that's, I would say, the area of greatest interest right now. But also, I've been looking into continuing this, looking into cases where there's been there's medical evidence, medical injury, actually, of abduction cases, which is it's quite rare, but it's very disturbing when it happens.
Is it beginning to happen more and more, these injuries?
No, not more and more, but it's perhaps that we're hearing more of it. You see, all along, things have been going along in great numbers for years and years and years. Back, you know, I have abduction cases dating to the 1920s, but it's a process of us being able to recognize that these things are actually happening. So I'm sure there are many, many medical problems that have resulted from abductions in the past that we're not aware of. But one of the most recent ones that's interesting to me, recent in terms of finding out about it, is a man who had remembered pieces of abduction experiences. A man in his 50s, a very reliable sort, had gone to bed at night, and when he woke up, he had incredible pain in his neck. Went to the doctor, and ultimately x-rays were done, and they found that he had severe damage to the neck. They, matter of fact, the doctor called him when he got the x-ray results and said, if you're sitting down, continue sitting down. The ambulance is coming. I don't want you to move. You could actually end up severing your spinal column. So this man has gone through something like seven operations, now has very little movement in one of his arms. But what happened, this is really quite incredible. When he looked into this under hypnosis with a hypnotist in his area, upstate New York, he floated upwards in an abduction from the bed, and apparently in some way or other his body continued to go through the ceiling effortlessly, but his head was extended out beyond it, and his head was hitting the solid ceiling and being forced back until the aliens realized that they hadn't worked their magic on the entire body. And there was even left a dent in the ceiling where his head had been.
Oh, my. So you're starting to get physical evidence now, too, huh?
So this was a situation where, yeah, where it's obviously nothing that was intended by the UFO occupants. And when he was taken into the craft finally that night, they did some, apparently, some magical things to his neck to help him, but it wasn't a perfect kind of healing, and he needed these operations. So this is a new case, and it's extremely odd, but very, very interesting.
But Dr. David Jacobs believes that whatever is happening in this entire field, that it's not a good thing. He thinks these extraterrestrials, let's call them that for lack of a better phrase right now, that they're up to something. Do you share that belief?
Well, if the first question is whether they're doing anything good. I have yet to see anything good come out of this. And, of course, having worked with people for over 30 years now, I've seen so much kind of emotional scarring, the whole problem, post-traumatic stress disorder, the confusions, the effects in people's self-esteem and so on, that has done it has not done any good that I can see from anybody. Although I don't have the sense that this is any of the damages that I'm discussing here, either emotional or physical, are deliberate. They're just collateral damages, we used to say, when we bombed a hospital instead of a radar replacement or something, an accident. But in terms of what ultimately is going to happen, we still don't know. So if you just try to make a score of whether this has been helpful in the meantime, it certainly hasn't been. Now, if they infiltrate our society and end up somehow giving us the cure to cancer and new technology and for free energy or whatnot, that would be quite wonderful. But there's no sign that any of that has happened.
No, they would have done that by now, don't you think, Bud? They would have saved us.
That's what it would seem like. Absolutely. And it's just very hard, I think, for anybody to make a case that this has been helpful to anyone. It's the one thing is that abductees have seen a world that the rest of us, that you and I, have not seen, which gives them an insight into a broader spectrum of the world than the average person has, and that's a gift in some sense. And I used the analogy once in the idea that somebody who, if you have two young guys who are friends and one goes off to Iraq to fight in the war and the other stays home and works in McDonald's, you know that when the one returns from Iraq, if he's lucky enough to survive, that his view of all of life, of emotion, of the range of the human spirit is going to be much more profound than the kid that stays home and works at McDonald's. But if you ask that soldier who comes back, well, would you want your kid to go through with this? No soldier.
Nobody does. No police officer wants his son to really go through what he goes through. You're
exactly.
Absolutely right.
And abductees, just up 100% in my knowledge, if you ask them, do you want your kid to go through this, they're terrified at the idea. So that has to tell you that this has not been a pleasant experience.
Are you convinced that whatever is going on, it is real?
Well, it's an interesting thing. I've been writing my memoirs of years of all of this and my career as an artist and the whole thing. And one of the things I just finished writing was exactly on this, that I had been asked a number of years ago by somebody the same question that you asked me. Am I convinced it's real? And I said as an answer, and put this in the memoir, that the problem is that I no longer have the luxury of disbelief. It would be nice to be able to say maybe it isn't true, or I think very strongly it might not be, it might be this or that, the other thing. I don't have that luxury anymore, and that's a very sad place to be.
You know, you've been doing this for such a long time, but I remember even back in my local days, hearing about you, reading your works, of course, Missing Time, Intruders, Witness, the true story of the Brooklyn Bridge UFO abductions. I remember all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking at that time, and I think he's starting to do this again. John Carpenter, remember him from Missouri?
John, great guy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know he got out of it, and then I think he's starting to look into some of these cases again, but I mean, you are, and truthfully, the father of alien abduction cases. John Mack came in after you. God rest his soul.
Yeah.
You're still here. You know, you and the I call the home run hitters of ufology, Stanton Friedman and you folks.
Yeah.
I mean, you are dedicating your careers to trying to get an answer
to a very perplexing question. I mean, we just heard the story of Jeremy Vaney, who, you know, it's very puzzling, too, because they're not all the same. Sometimes they're the grays. In his case, something strange. Last night I had a guest on, wonderful guest, who talked about this reptilian intervention. Have you ever come across cases like that where people say they're reptilians?
Yes, I've run into some cases where they're describing the UFO occupants as having sort of scaled skin and a more reptilian look. And in a number of these cases, these reptilian beings are cooperating as part of the crew, along with the grays and the other type that we've run into, the very tall sort of insect-like figures. So we have, you know, a whole history of these different types or races or whatever you want to call them, seemingly doing the same thing together in the same craft. So we don't have what we might like to think, that there's group A doing this and group B doing that and so forth. The basic type that we run into most of the time is gray figures. Of course, that's thousands and thousands and thousands of cases. Cases where they're describing a reptilian figure are far fewer, but in one case, I worked with a woman who was abducted in Pakistan. I worked with her in Turkey, as a matter of fact. She had been with the regular grays and with these reptilian figures. So it all seems to be about the same thing. They don't seem to be different apart from appearance.
If I recall your story of witness, the true story of the Brooklyn Bridge UFO abductions. Wasn't that the Linda Cortese case?
Linda Cortella case, yes.
Cortella, okay. Tell me about that again.
Oh, boy. That's the case. It took me about 400 pages to tell that one. It's essentially an incredible case because for the very first time that I'm aware of, we had a sense of the UFO occupants deliberately showing off what they could do to important political figures. This was just in 1989 in November at the time that the whole Russian Empire was cracking up and the Berlin Wall was coming down and so forth. There was a great deal of international turmoil. And somehow Linda, who had had many abduction experiences, was floated out of a 12-story window at the moment that a motorcade, 3 a.m, of important political figures were coming from the United Nations, heading elsewhere. They were going to a helicopter pad downtown. And all those cars were stopped. The engines were killed somehow, as the aliens are able to do. And when she floated out the window with three small aliens in midair, all the lights were on from the UFO and everything else, as if the show was for everybody to see. And she was taken into the craft that's then zoomed away. And we actually know that one of the major political figures who was in that motorcade was also taken that night, plus a couple of security intelligence agents.
Did that end up being the Secretary General of the United Nations?
Well,
I always tried to figure that out when I read your book.
George, at this point, I have never confirmed or denied that, simply because I'm not in a position to out anybody or to confirm something that is going to cause any kind of pain to anyone in particular. In my book, I have a long interview that I did with him, with this particular figure, and without identifying him. And people can, I suppose, read the interview and judge from themselves what they think about him. But the point is that...
How's my guess? But
the thing is that it wasn't Margaret Thatcher. We'll look at it.
No, it wasn't her. But I guess if your very dearest, closest friend was with you, and you two were sitting together over dinner, and he looks you or she looks you in the eyes and said, "Come on, bud, tell me, what do you think this is?" What would you say?
What would I think about what?
About everything you've investigated, I mean, can you tell yourself, can you honestly tell yourself what you, you know, and I asked you the question before, what is it? But, well, I mean, this has got to be perplexing even you.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the basic thing. Originally, you know, we saw UFOs flying around and we thought they were of terrestrial origin. And ultimately, this is back in history. We had occupant reports and we thought, oh, my gosh, little people in there, but they're leaving us alone. And then, of course, the Hill case erupted. And suddenly we thought, well, at least they seem to have been bothering this one couple, but nobody else. Until, of course, we began to find that this was extremely widespread. And at each step of the way, we were learning more about the patterns. And I've studied the patterns of this from the beginning. And we're able to know absolutely that this happens and that doesn't happen over and over and over and over again. And the basic things, real breakthrough, I think, was the one I wrote about in Intruders, when we began to discover that women were having ova samples taken and men's sperm samples, and these pregnancies were beginning to occur sometimes with women who had no sexual activity.
Right.
And then out came the whole situation that there was a kind of removal of a developing very, very small fetus, and they seemed to be developing a kind of mix of human and alien characteristics. It was a breeding program. And
now, do you hear, though, if those hybrids are being returned back to this planet, or are they being taken away?
Well, we don't really know. First of all, lots of the offspring are probably, as happens with such breeding programs, are probably don't survive for one reason or another. But I think the ultimate goal is, as you keep inbreeding and you keep reducing the alien aspect of these figures and make them look more human in generation by generation by generation, and then we begin to get these reports from abductees and other people who are seen to be dealing on Earth with these people driving cars and having jobs and assisting the aliens in abductions and so on, that really this is a kind of cadre of an alien, well, you might call it a fifth column. It has a terrible connotation. But that seems to be what the whole thing was about from the beginning. But we don't know, of course, what that intention is, what they finally intend to do. Are they just going to ultimately leave and go home, wherever that is? Or, you know, could it be some ominous thing for us? It gives me sleepless nights, I have to say.
Does it really?
Yeah. I've just become a grandfather, and, you know, one thinks of the future of little children on
absolutely
beings in a world that we don't really understand. Here we have global warming, which it's taken the population years and years to begin to listen to the scientists who have been trying to tell us, and only some scientists were trying to tell others at the time that this was our future, and it was a very, very dangerous future. Well, I think exactly the same thing is happening here. We don't know ultimately what's going to happen, but I think that it casts a very, very long shadow over the future of generations here on Earth.
Well, Bud, you take care of yourself, and we'll be in touch, and I'm sure I'll run into you at a conference or two along the line, okay?
Absolutely.
It's Bud Hopkins. He's one of the best. I love the guy. Took my 13-year-old grandchild out today to dinner. She looked me in the eyes and said, well, Papa Giorgio, I fell asleep during your TV show. I didn't have a chance to watch it. I guess she had school. I'll be back in a moment. Stephen Bassett, he puts on the very special X conference. He's next on Coast to Coast AM.